You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. It's Nissan's Winter Warrior event. Lease or finance a Kicks or Cash Tie to receive up to three payments on them. Finance rates from 0% on select Cash Ties. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
Final Hour Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app and up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes and Craig Button in here. The O-Dog is off to do panel work tonight. Leafs Pens down at Scotiabank. You can watch it on TSN 4 and hear it right here on TSN Radio. Bob McKenzie, your hockey insider, will be in studio in just a moment. Sidney Crosby in town, and they are not the reigning Stanley Cup champs, but whenever they're here, they kind of feel like they're a championship team, right? You just know it. You know what kind of effort you're going to get. He's not a flashy superstar, Sid. Malkin can be, but they are a really good team. And it's them and Tampa. They don't lose right now. Those are the two hottest teams in the league.
Well, you know, you look at what Tampa's done, 23-2-1 in their last 26 games. It's absolutely amazing. Be a good game for Tampa in Vegas tonight.
Right.
I mean, that'll be a good, hard game. And, you know, the Leafs can, you know, since January 4th, they're 7-8-3. 7-8-3.
Not that good.
No, it isn't.
It's really not that good.
And a goals against that is greater than their goals for. So this goal-scoring team has got some real defensive deficiencies that have hurt it. They can't outscore the problems. That's what's happened.
Well, and their power plays, they don't get enough power plays, which I do have a gripe with some of the officiating. I don't think, for whatever reason, maybe it's the makeup, maybe it's the reputation, like they don't fight enough for penalties, that they don't get the calls. But that's an area where you can't predict it. You can't, force a ref's hand, but if you do play hard enough, you're going to get penalties. You're going to get power plays. If you got the puck and you're winning battles, teams are going to try to compensate by tripping you, hooking you, holding you. And that's probably a sign also of, you know, what has happened over the past handful of games here where they're not winning 50-50 battles, they don't have the puck enough, and they're not working hard enough to even generate a power play. But once they get on it, it is ice cold right now. That's another. Yeah. There's no urgency even in their power play.
I agreed. It wants to be a power play based on, you know, artistry, right? And you know, it's nice to have artistry, but you got to have some real, you know, put your work boots on and, you know, grind it out in some areas. The other thing that I would add to that, Brian, teams are too good defending. If you don't attack inside the dots and you want to hold the puck outside the dots and just skate around and twirl around, teams don't even care. Go stand over there. Go over there, do your pirouettes in the corner.
Yep.
Pass it back and forth between a defenseman and you down the thing. Circle along, try to loop around and switch around. Teams don't care. They don't care. So the Toronto Maple Leafs have to attack into what I call inside hockey. They're not doing that either. That's another good way not to put the other team on notice that we're going to challenge you and you might have to take penalties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No,
they don't do it.
They don't. I mean, their power play. We haven't brought up Morgan Riley at any point today, and we haven't brought him up probably enough over the past month or so. Now, he was not having a great year based on his standards. He was not putting up big numbers defensively. He was getting beat badly. I mean, one of the last images we can remember was when McDavid was here, and he put him in a body bag, basically. And it was not long after that he suffered the foot injury, and he's been out. But there's something else about Morgan Riley that I think gets understated a little bit. My understanding is in the room, he is the leader of the team. He is the guy who is essentially detailing how they're going to play, what they're going to do, not only in the room and on the ice, but more so on the road, you know, setting up dinners and all that kind of stuff. I've always heard that about Morgan Riley. He's also he does play with emotion. You know, he's not a big hitter or a fighter, but I do think he gets in the muck a little bit. He yaps. He's emotional to an extent. I think they really miss him, you know, and I think that goes without saying. He's their number one defenseman, but they have every defenseman playing out of position because Morgan Riley isn't in the lineup, and they have deficiencies even beyond that. But I look at Jake Muzzin. He's a three or a four. Tyson Barrie's been playing more like a five. Dermott, Hall, Sandin, Liljegren, Marinson, they're third pairing guys on good teams. So at 25 minutes, like tonight, I would have expected if he was in the lineup, Riley would play maybe 30 tonight.
Yeah.
He might. And you can't rely on it because he's not there.
Ken Hitchcock always used to say, you know, you get into those situations either with injuries or if your team isn't, you know, have the right players in the right spots, you get players scaled up too high. And when they're scaled up too high, they get exposed. They get extended.
Right.
And that's a problem. I'm going to ask you this. And, you know, and it's not something that you have to answer fully today. Think about it, ask it, and carry on. We go back, and I've thought about this, and we talk about Sidney Crosby, and you hear about, you know, how he handles things and everything, right? Why don't we go back? Petrangelo, captain of the St. Louis Blues. Ovechkin, Washington Capitals. Crosby, Taze, Dustin Brown. Do I need to keep going back? Mm-hmm. Yzerman.
Yeah, that
everything.
Works.
Yep. So when you start to think about captains of teams, I start to go back and I'm starting to think back. You know, start back all the way. You go all the way back. Mary Lemieux, 91, 92, right? Mm-hmm. You know, 93, it was a little bit different with Montreal and the way they were, right? 94, one of the greatest, if not the greatest captain of all time, Messier, right? Then start to go through it. 95, Scott Stephens mm-hmm. and Chara. Was it a mistake to have John Tavares be the captain? And you bring it up right now. You think about giving ownership to young players and to players that have been homegrown players. McKinnon's the captain. McDavid's the captain. Bo Horvat's the captain. This is not an indictment. I don't want anybody to think on John Tavares, right? I'm talking about organizationally. You want your young players who have come into the organization, right? And these are your guys, and they look around. They look around. You don't think that Austin Matthews, Morgan Riley don't look around and go, well, geez, you know, I'm a Maple Leaf, right? And do they not, is there not something to be discussed? Was John Tavares the right choice to
make that? Yes, I thought so at the time.
I know you did.
I mean,
I'm trying to use the history now.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. And I think it's even more prevalent with a guy like Riley than it is Matthews, who I think still has a recognition that he's young. Now, I think actually Matthews has handled this better than Tavares has. They're different personalities. Yeah. But I think Matthews has actually come out of his shell a little bit. He's been ornery at times. You know, he gave it the old next question a couple of nights ago. I'm fine with that. I don't need you to give me some detailed answer all the time. You're not under any obligation to answer every single thing that is posed to you. I'm okay with it. Not all the time. Yeah. But in the moment, if you're genuinely pissed off because of your own play or because of your team's play. But I think Matthews has handled this pretty well. Tavares is who he is. I mean, he's an established personality. He's not a guy that's going to yell and scream, be a rah-rah type of guy. I do think, looking back on it now, Morgan Riley in particular, because he didn't have a great year. Now he's outside of the room. I don't remember too many sound bites out of him between the announcement that Tavares was going to be the captain and when he got injured. Like, I know he would speak daily, but he used to be a guy that would give you really detailed answers and I think appreciated the spotlight. I remember having him on a couple of years ago, interviewing him, and went out of his way. They were playing well at the time. They had won a few games on the road. They had a good road trip. And what stood out to me was, you know, he said, I couldn't wait to get home and play here because we're playing well. And that rang true to me as a guy that just loved being a Maple Leaf. Loved being a Maple Leaf. Remember the reaction of his dad at the draft.
Yeah, Andy.
Grew up, lived in Vancouver, but his dad, huge Leaf fan. Ecstatic that they took him fifth overall. And I think Morgan Riley has always represented this team well, the city well. I think he's loved being a Leaf. And I wouldn't be surprised. It never came out, and I wouldn't expect him to show his colors. But if he was a little bit thrown off by not necessarily not getting the captaincy, but it going to Tavares as opposed to Matthews because of what you detail. Not that he doesn't respect John Tavares.
Totally agree.
But because it's like, wait a minute, I've been here grinding. We've been here grinding. We've been here trying to represent the crest and the city, et cetera. And maybe it was on Tavares. Now, that's a lot. You know, I don't know if it's fair to put that on him, but maybe Tavares should have been like, guys, Dubas, Babcock, and I think it was Babcock that was really driving it, which also might bring it into question because he's not even here anymore. But maybe it would have been better if Tavares just said, put an A on my jersey. I'm going to lead, guys. Don't worry about me. I'm going to continue to do everything I've done. But I don't think it's right for me to take this responsibility on from a guy who's been here since day one.
Well, John Tavares, when he was named the captain of the New York Islanders, so that young guy being given ownership of the team, This has. I don't need fire and brimstone from a captain. I don't need great. I'm just asking from an ownership point of view. I'm talking about players taking ownership. This is my team. How you point out about Morgan Rielly. This is my team. I think there's way too many. I think there's overwhelming evidence that John Tavares was the wrong choice to be captain. And it has nothing to do with his leadership or his personality or what he is as a player or what he is as a person. I'm talking about as an organization and saying to those players, you own the team, you're the guy.
The message being sent. Yeah. Well, I mean, they had gone about it in the proper fashion, too, I believe, because they didn't jump right back in. After they traded Phaneuf, they let it sit for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with patience. There's nothing wrong with...
I don't quibble with that.
No, making a determination when the time is right. But even with all that being the case and that being said, I still felt like they almost got peer pressured into it to an extent as well. You know, and partially that's media-driven. There's no denying that. You get posed the question all the time. When are you going to announce a captain? Who's going to be the captain? The source of debate in the city. A positive one. I mean, there's nothing negative about it. They had good options. I think it was always going to come down to Rielly, Matthews, or Tavares. But I do think the Babcock element of it all factors in, too. Like, I think he was driving home John Tavares. Driving home. And I don't know what that... That was a bit of a disconnect there as well. Because Shanahan and Dubas, they have treated Rielly well. They treated Matthews well. They gave Matthews everything. They realized the significance of him coming aboard. And I'm not sure how they came to that conclusion or how Mike Babcock won that battle. Well, I believe he did. I think he was the one fighting.
But you win a battle, but like, you know, going through it with, and like I said, looking at all the evidence around you and you look at all these teams and where we are, you know, in sports with young players, you know, being given the mantle, right? I mean, that's just the trend. It's not like this is rare. This is what happens now. Mm-hmm.
Well, and you're dealing with human beings, right? Yeah. You're dealing with emotion. You're dealing with expectation. I don't know if Matthews, you know, dreamed of being a captain of a team. I don't know. I mean, I've never heard him necessarily talk about it. I feel like Rielly probably thought about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, I feel
I do.
Like it,
I do know.
And I feel like the reaction may have been, like, Tavares has been a captain, is a captain, captain material. Again, we can't clarify that enough. Don't start sending in messages. Why are you hating on Tavares? It's not about Tavares.
No.
Tavares was a captain. He was the right choice in New York because of everything you've detailed about the process and how he got there. But I do wonder, and I'd love to know. I wish I was a fly on the wall. You know, the reaction in the room when the news started to filter through. And I feel like if it was Rielly, it would have been just a celebration, adulation, because of who I believe he is in that room and to all the players. I guess we'll never know.
Well, maybe what we need, you know, Open Gym, which was nominated, right?
Yes. Yeah.
maybe what we should have is, you know, the behind the closed doors on what went into the decision to name the captain.
Well, I spotlighted the captain when we went through our list in the 4 p.m. hour. I know you included him as well. For me, he's number one.
Yeah, bud, totally right with you.
Because if you are the captain. And I didn't think John Tavares played well a couple of nights ago. I definitely didn't think he played well in Buffalo. And I think he's got more on the line and at stake right now just simply because of a timeline, because of his age. He's 29. Matthews is 22. Marner's 22. Nylander's 23. He's got to get, like, if they miss the playoffs, what a waste for John Tavares. And he'll probably see his former team back in, and they might do some damage. That's a tough explanation, man.
Well, it's a tough explanation, and then you do that examination of where you're at in your career with all the questions that have to be asked over a summer. That's not showing up, and you know, September can't be far enough away, and it can't be soon enough when you miss the playoffs like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't even want to think about coming back, but then you're excited again, but... You know, it would be very, very fascinating because the questions are going to be, if they don't make the playoffs, the questions are going to be simply like, is this the core that can get you there? It's not going to be, is Alex Kerfoot the right guy to be your third line center?
Right.
It's going to be
front
is this
center the big boy.
Is this going to be and so when you talk
as it
about,
should be.
I told, and that's why I said the five of them, and whether they're one or five, I'll put them all in a tie for one. Show me what you got.
I agree with you, and I think there needs to be more focus on the players. Like, I know the history of the city. You do as well. I've lived here my whole life. We and I've said this recently, we are a GM-obsessed city. We do it with all the teams. Probably the best example from a positive perspective, and I got into this a couple of weeks ago, was the amount of attention and congratulation directed towards Masai Ujiri for the Raptors winning the title. Masai didn't play. He didn't hit a shot. He didn't pick up a rebound. But he gets more love than probably anybody else because he was the architect that finally got it right. There's been so many different examples of GMs with the Raptors, the Blue Jays, the Maple Leafs that couldn't get it right. The Blue Jays, we talk more about Chaparin Atkins than we do Vladdy and Bo Bichette. Yep. And it's the same thing here in Toronto. Like, you know, we keep debating, what's Dubas going to do? Is Dubas the guy? Can Dubas get it done? Well, how about the players who are going to be on the ice tonight? There's a time and a place for Dubas. He'll be front and center at the draft, July 1st, the trade deadline. Absolutely. I'm not saying that he's off the hook or out of the conversation. But the players are the ones that have to play. Players are the ones that are capable of winning. This is not a team that lacks talent.
No.
Where they've overachieved to even be in the position they're in. They have talent. They're underachieving to be in the position they're in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, and
I know they're flawed in areas, but they got enough talent. More than half the league gets into the playoffs. You have to be unlucky to miss. 16 of 31 get in. Every year, there's 6 to 8 teams that get in. You're like, no, they're okay, but someone's got to get in.
You're so right. And, you know, the thing about, and I've, when I critique the Toronto Maple Leafs, it's not about as a team that's poor or not good enough. It's about a team that you think there's more there. And as you point out about the flaws that they have at this point in time give me zero confidence that they're a Stanley Cup contender. But it doesn't mean that they can't play better and they're not capable of playing better. And it was interesting what James said when he was here, that Sydney thinks they're a pretty good team.
Well, and listen.
Players matter.
And
they watch.
That would be based more on, I think, the high-end talent.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't think Sidney Crosby is familiar with Pierre Engvall. Like, I don't think he's got a read on. Like, he might know him or whatever, but I don't think he's sitting at home watching game tape on 47 in white tonight. Or blue tonight. But I think he looks at it, and I think the whole league does, and you've heard other players say it, like Matthews, Marner, Tavares, Nylander, throw Hyman in there. So Hyman's had a great year.
Oh, yeah, he is.
Those are five forwards they're very good players.
Yeah,
very good players.
Very good to superstar.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Like the high-end are superstars. Yeah. Like, Matthews getting to 50-plus.
Oh, no question.
Like, he's getting there, and Marner is going to likely average somewhere in the range of, you know, a 100-point season over 82 games, give or take. Like, you don't do that by accident. But those are the guys in the front seat tonight. Let's see what they got.
Yep.
Because they're going up against equals, if not superior, players tonight. Like, Sid Malkin's playing. Look out.
Well, nobody's saying on the Pittsburgh side of things, let's see what Sidney has tonight. Let's see what Gino has tonight. Let's see what Brian Rust has tonight. Let's see what Chris Letang has tonight. And the interesting thing, too, is, I mean, Tristan Jarry plays Tuesday. They come back with Matt Murray tonight.
Right. That's how confident they are.
Well, they're confident, and it's like they have a tandem there. Yeah. And so now, you know, even that type of advantage for the Penguins, you know, you look at it and you say, okay, they're not going to get the same goalie. Toronto's facing a different goalie tonight, different style. How do we attack him? It's fascinating.
Yep. It's going to be a fun game. You can hear it right here on TSN Radio. Watch it on TSN4. Mike Sando coming up, senior NFL writer for The Athletic, on the new proposals from the owners in the NFL in a 17-game season and an expanded playoff. We'll tell you more about that. We'll get into it. Best Bets brought to you by ProLine later in the hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, we'll get to our Best Bets brought to you by ProLine a little bit later in the hour. Mike Sando will join us here in a moment from The Athletic, a senior NFL writer. Some NFL news, including Emmett Smith, which I think this is quite rich. He is suggesting or proposing that Dak Prescott takes a discount on his contract in Dallas, knowing that he will benefit from being the face of America's team. In other words, you're going to make it up with endorsement deals because you're the quarterback of the Cowboys.
BS.
Do you remember Emmett Smith?
Yeah.
Early into the 90s when he decided, I'm not playing the first 2 weeks?
Yep.
I'm pretty sure he was a poster boy for America's team at that point. I'm sure Gatorade and Nike and different companies were calling him up.
Didn't he take a pay cut?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And he made sure I'm getting paid. He didn't take a discount for anything. And it is remarkably hypocritical for him to suggest Dak Prescott should do it.
Unless your name's Ronaldo, Messi, Tiger, Kobe, the late Kobe, right? Jordan, right? The endorsement. I mean, Dak Prescott could sign for $35 million. And Emmitt Smith suggesting that he can go make that up in endorsements? Garbage.
No way. No
garbage.
Way. And it's not Prescott's, for starters.
Steph Curry, those are the endorsement guys.
Right. Well, exactly. Like Prescott, there's only so much you're really going to get. You know, like Patrick Mahomes is playing in the league. This is the NFL. It doesn't matter that you're in Dallas. He's in Kansas City. He's more marketable than you.
Let me just tell you, like Emmitt played with Troy. Troy was getting all the...
Right. And Irvin was getting a lot of love. And Primetime was there. And, you know, it's he sat out. He literally sat out because he wouldn't take a discount. Or even just market value. He's like, you have to pay. I mean, they lost the first two games and he got paid. Your senior writer with the Athletic, Mike Sando. What do you make of Emmitt Smith suggesting Dak Prescott should take a discount?
That would be like Dak Prescott saying, hey, okay, why don't you pay me some of the difference? You made some good coin in your career as a Cowboys running back. You
no
know?
Kidding.
Help me out. Why don't you help contribute? So, but the funny part about that is that Dak Prescott, of all those guys that are on the team now, if you just look at Amari Cooper, Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, he's the one who should get the money the most, not only because quarterback's most important, but because he came in as a fourth-round pick. He's made relatively no money to this point in his career while providing tremendous value. Ezekiel Elliott was a top-five pick. He made money on his rookie contract. Amari Cooper was a first-round pick. He made money already. Prescott's played for nothing and should be able to maximize his value for sure.
Yeah. And I think he will at some point. I mean, maybe gets franchise tagged. Who knows? But let's get into the news that came out yesterday. And it had been percolating for a while that the NFL owners were going to push a 17-game schedule. That is not surprising that it's in the current proposal for the PA. But the expanded playoff picture is not something I had seen before. Maybe you had heard of that, Mike. But this idea that they are going to add two teams per conference, and instead of two byes per conference, only the top seed will get a bye in the first round. I'm intrigued by it. What do you make of these details, and where do you see this going?
Yeah, you know, I think it makes perfect sense. I think that we all want to watch more games. Let's just admit it. I mean, the XFL comes on, and people are excited and watching it. So I think there's definitely a market for more NFL games. You're always looking for more ways to grow the pie for players and owners, make more money. I think they're all interested in that. You also probably sell some hope. You know, in the NFL is all about selling hope, right? The draft, free agency, people are excited because it gives them hope. If you've got two more playoff spots, I think that means a lot for a couple of fan bases to get in there. It's probably good for stability in the game. You have a couple more teams making the playoffs. Maybe they don't fire their coaches, that sort of thing. Also, the league has expanded. The added teams to the league, 3-4 teams are new since the playoff field was set at 12. So proportionally, it's not the end of the world. And then finally, those seventh seeds who aren't making the playoffs, they usually have a winning record. They're usually not below 500. I see more upside than downside.
With Mike Sando from The Athletic. So what about the players, though? I mean, this is always about a negotiation. Mm-hmm. The owners, they're doing it because they want more money. But do you think it's likely the Players Association will sign off on the 17-game season and furthermore, the expanded playoff format?
I think that it is likely. Now, the hang-up, it seems to be, is when the 17-game schedule would be implemented. Maybe it wouldn't be implemented right away, but I think that clearly there's a correlation between how many games are in the season and how much TV money comes in and how much money then can go to the players. So I think ultimately money usually talks in these things, and that's why I think that will be the most appealing avenue.
Yeah, I mean, I guess player safety gets thrown out the window pretty quickly when you're talking about like billions of dollars potentially.
Well, it depends too. What's the best mechanism for player safety? Is the best mechanism continuing to modify the rules to reduce the number of headshots, because we're really talking about concussions when we talk about player safety, right? We're not talking about ankle injuries that football players have had for years. So right now, you've got many teams playing more than 17 games per year because of the playoffs, right? The Patriots have played 16 more games than the Bengals over the last 4 years. That's really what needs to be reconciled. And then you have to decide as a player, is doubling the amount of bye weeks worth adding 1/16th number of games? And I think as long as they're taking the head out of the game more and more, and then the number of actual games becomes less important, I would think.
With Mike Sando from The Athletic, Greg Robinson in the news, probably for the first time since draft night back in 2014 when he went second overall, gets pulled over with 157 pounds of weed in his car. I mean, I don't know what this guy was doing. Maybe this was a retirement maneuver. I have no idea. But let's say somehow he skates. Somehow he gets through it. Can you picture him playing in the NFL again?
That's one of those things where is he a good enough player to, you know, I suppose if the Chargers were dropped, yes, you could see him playing again. But he's not one of those guys who's just so good as a player that teams will bend over backwards, kind of like what happened with Antonio Brown. You know, like the Raiders still took him. The Patriots still took him. It took a multiple escalations of his situation before nobody wanted to deal with him. And I think that that's because of his talent and that Greg Robinson does not impact a roster the same way. So this would seem to be very bad for his career prospects.
Yeah, I can't imagine that his agent is calling every team off the hook saying, hey, keep a spot for us because we think we can get off the hook. And we'll get back to you when we do that.
Hey, Mike, you know, going back to the CBA, you know, we see that the owners, you know, approved the negotiated terms. What are the holdups for the players?
Well, probably the...
Or potential holdups, sorry.
The timing of the implementation of the 17-game schedule, I think, would be one of the clear ones that they want to talk about. I think there's also some potential just, you know, politics going on here where the leadership of the Players Association, right now Eric Winston is the president, there's going to be an election for that spot coming up later this offseason. Russell Okung, who's played for the Chargers, is a candidate to become the president. So could there be factions within the players who maybe want to see Okung's vision go in to affect more? I think that's something that could be percolating under the scene, behind the scenes, but ultimately you would think because the PA leadership and the NFL seem to have some basic parameters, you would think then that the players would come into line if that is true.
Well, we'll see. I mean, we're just getting going with the offseason here, but, you know, the CBA, free agency, the draft, Brady, where that's going to go, there's a lot going on. You can find him at The Athletic, senior NFL writer Mike Sando. Thank you for this, Mike.
Thank you.
Well, we'll see. I mean, again, I'm generally a proponent of if it's not broke, don't fix it. But I'm also a hypocrite because I'll watch anyway, right? Like a 16-game season and the way the playoffs work, I don't need it to change at all. I love it. I love the NFL. I cannot get enough. But if you're going to give me an extra game during the regular season and a couple of extra playoff games, I'm also – it's not like I'm going to boycott those and suggest that I'm not going to pay attention. I'll be there. I'll be watching it. I'll probably be gambling on it. I'll have fantasy implications. I'm in. So let's go. Let's just get to the bottom of this and make it happen.
Did you watch any of the XFL?
No, I couldn't care less about the XFL.
Okay. I'm of the same mindset. And, you know, there's no NFL players there, I know, and those things. But I did turn it on at the beginning just to kind of see some of what they're
I've
doing.
I've seen a little bit
of it. Yeah. I haven't dialed into it, but just because of that football intrigue, like, you know, what kind of players are there? Like, you know, what does
like the different
Cordell,
rules.
What's the name of the Ohio State quarterback? Jones, yeah, Cordell Jones, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, you watch him, and not having watched him at Ohio State, you know, you kind of go,
"Look good,
yeah,
man."
He did, didn't he?
Look good.
So
went back to school, burned him.
Yeah,
remember he was going to come out. I want to say he was like a redshirted sophomore, maybe at the time, and he was going to come out, and I think he would have gone in the first round. He went back, and then it was like that's
hurt.
It.
Urban Meyer.
Yeah, well, you could tell he was raw, right? He was like that. That is the amazing thing about football. in college football and trying to project it, because we're almost in draft season. For a lot of like NFL junkies, we are, with mock drafts and all that, is you have such a limited amount of actual game tape to make a decision on somebody. Like, that's why the combine is so important, and I think overemphasized, but it's a chance to actually see them, you know, see them run, see them lift, see them jump, whatever, interview process. I think you rely a lot on the head coach, coordinator, teammates, et cetera, trying to get intel on the player that you're about to actually choose. But there are guys who, you know, they don't start like the first two or three years. They give you 1 year of start. You got like 11 games to look at. And you're thinking about taking this guy in the first round. Like, I remember Mark Sanchez was an example of that. And Sanchez had a decent career. I mean, the butt fumble is what he will be famous for forever, and he should be. And he just kind of filtered away. And he wasn't great, but he went to the playoffs. He went to the AFC Championship game a couple of times. But he, I believe, came out of USC after his junior year. I want to say he was backing up Leinart for a while. And I think he had like 13, 14 starts in his whole career. 13 or 14 games. Imagine being an NHL scout, and you've seen a guy play 14 times, and you have to make a call on whether or not you're going to take him fifth overall in the draft. How difficult would that
be? To come and start on your team and be a
difference maker. And right away you're in.
It's not about
projecting.
And the
poster boy.
Oh, I know.
Like, right away he's in, he's starting, he's your guy, you've built around him, you think you have a Super Bowl contending team.
Yeah.
You have 14 games. See what you know and what you can get to know about him.
Well, and you go back to Cordell Jones, right? Like, and you know that this happens in the NFL. You know, sometimes you got to strike when the iron's hot. Like, and
absolutely.
Somebody looks at you, go, you're not ready, and you're going, wait a second, you could be a first round pick. What does that mean, money wise, and everything that goes with it? Right?
I'm worried about Chuba Hubbard.
Yeah.
I'm worried about him because he's going back to Oklahoma State. He put up monster numbers.
Yep.
And I'm sure someone got to him and said, listen, you're not going in the first two or three rounds. That would be my guess.
Me too.
And he's probably like, okay, I think if I go back, and it's his right, it's his life. I mean, there are a lot of guys that just, they want to go back. They love, why would you not love playing college football?
Oh.
You're with your friends every day. You get to play in front of 80,000 people. You're a guy in a small town. It'd be incredibly cool. But I worry about him because even if he's not going in the top two or three, he's going somewhere. He would have been drafted somewhere. The numbers he put up, he was going somewhere. If he goes back and gets injured or has a down year, what if he doesn't get drafted next year?
That could happen.
It very well could. Actually, Leinart was a good example of that.
Yep.
If Leinart came out, I believe, after his junior year, he probably goes first overall. And he went back and he goes 10th. Now, he still went 10th and he made a lot of money, but from pick one to pick 10, there's millions of dollars.
Yeah,
lost
there is, you know, the significant dollars.
Yeah.
And who knows, you end up on that team at number one, it might be different than the team you ended up at 10.
Totally different path.
Yeah.
Totally different path. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Tee up the NHL board tonight, including the Maple Leaf game. The Leafs are out there for their pregame skate. Looks like Martin Marincin is in the lineup, so Liljegren is not going to be playing. And we'll get you more of an update on the four lines, the three pairings, and what we expect tonight down at Scotiabank. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Leafs Pens coming up on TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. So Sidney Crosby in town, Malkin in town. Penguins are red hot, but it is more about the Leafs tonight. I mean, they got to respond. And we'll see what they have in store. They've switched up a couple of things according to the pregame skate. It sounds like Malgin, who they've just acquired, is going to step in with Nylander and Tavares on the second line. So this guy couldn't find his way in with Florida, who's not exactly, you know, they're a good team, and they're loaded up front. But Malgin steps in and gets second line minutes tonight. We'll see how long it lasts.
What's the third line?
Engvall, Kerfoot, and Kapanen.
Okay, so I can see that. So where's Spezza?
Spezza, according to the lineup in the pregame, is on the fourth line.
That'll teach Spezza for busting his ass on Tuesday night. Can you imagine? Think about this. Here's Spezza, who's played really well, gets embarrassed on opening night. I'm not going to rehash that one, mm-hmm. Okay? We know all what happened. I think he's played really well. I think he's given them, more than they could have ever expected. I think he's been a good, for what they've asked of him, been really good. And you bring in Dennis Malgin, you don't give a little bone to Jason Spezza? Are you kidding me? Really?
Yeah, really. Yeah.
You know what that is? That's a definition of a joke.
Well, Keefe had some weird thing to say the other day. Like, he was saying that Malgin's numbers when he plays with good players are, you know, and I kind of blew it off. Like, I don't even know what the hell you're talking about. I'm assuming it was analytically driven. You know, maybe his analytics are strong when he played with Barkov, but who doesn't when they play with Barkov?
Let me just tell you,
this. When you play with Barkov,
if he was a good player with Barkov, he'd still be playing with Barkov.
Well, that's the whole.
What are we going to get into the per 60 garbage?
Yeah, well, like, I'm assuming that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, give me a. Like, you know what? There's no debate about this, Brian. There's no debate about this. If you're a good player with good players, you know what coaches tend to do? Not tend to do what they always do.
Yeah,
they keep those players with them together.
Yeah.
Garbage.
I hear you.
Seriously, I'm getting all worked up about Jason Spezza. I feel like game one now of the season.
No, Spezza has been a bright spot for them all year. He's played well. He's exceeded the $700,000 pay stub. I mean, to put that lightly.
Give me a break.
And we'll find out what happens once the puck drops tonight. I mean, maybe Sheldon Keefe is going to move some stuff around. But
that's a good motivator for Jason Spezza, though, eh?
Well, he's been fighting through it. And
I know
he doesn't really have a choice.
I know he has. I'm not. Listen, I think Jason was a really good signing last summer. I shake my head.
Yeah.
I shake my head.
Well, I like that Kerfoot is moving down. I guess that is. He has not brought much, and he hasn't looked comfortable with Tavares and Nylander.
Oh, but I thought he, like, you know, all their analytics on Kerfoot were all this, too.
Well, I don't know. They acquired him.
But
well,
you know, you heard about all he was. I mean, I heard, oh, he's a center. No, he's not a center. He's always been a winger. Just because you take faceoffs doesn't make you a center. He's clearly showing he can't be a functional third-line center. What does he give you?
Well, he doesn't give you top six.
Yeah.
I mean, that he's clearly shown that as well. But they're paying him. You know, they're paying him $3.5 million for the next 3 years after this.
That's great.
Yeah, that one's,
you're paying him.
That
doesn't mean
stings.
He gives you what you need.
No. But, as we've been saying all year, I mean...
Jared McCann is the third-line center for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Do you think that he goes, I'm against Alex Kerfoot tonight? He's saying it's like having birthday cake. That's what he's saying tonight. It's a day at the beach playing against Alex Kerfoot.
Well, that is one thing that has become very clear. With Kadri not here anymore, is you can't hide Matthews and or Tavares. Not that you... should want to, and they get paid an amount where they shouldn't be seeking out, you know, witness protection here. But it was a benefit, and it is something that Babcock would utilize, where, like, a game like tonight, if Babcock was here and Kadri was here, Kadri would be on Sid. Or Malkin, who's more emotional. He might say, go out, and he hasn't been feeling so well, make him feel even worse. And Kadri would step up to the plate tonight. You guarantee it if he was here. Kerfoot, you know, different player. You can't expect him to play like his predecessor.
No,
I'm not
asking him to be like that.
But tonight, it's got to be Matthews Tavares against 87 and 71. And then Kerfoot, I guess, has to match up with McCann or whoever else he plays.
But I'm taking it into the mindset of an opponent.
Yeah,
I know you do. But the mindset of the opponent is, oh, no problem.
Yeah.
The mindset of when you're playing against Kadri is like, whew. This, and it gives you so many other options because you can double up Matthews and Tavares if you want at certain points, right? I mean, and then you're not vulnerable. Well, if you double up Matthews and Tavares, well, guess what Mike Sullivan's doing? Whoever you double up, and, you know, now Crosby or Malkin's coming out against Kerfoot, it's mismatch city.
Now you're in trouble. That is the truth. That going from Kadri to Kerfoot, like, if Kadri's ever on the ice, you're never worried.
The third line
doesn't
center
mean they
hole
won't
for
lose.
The Toronto Maple Leafs is a massive hole.
Yeah. Well, they had it, but it didn't, it, you know, they couldn't get over the hump. And Kadri.
Yeah,
listen,
I know the behavior. I get
yes,
it.
Yes, he put them in a position where that, I think that's clearly why they got rid of him.
I get
they
it.
Wanted to trade him to Calgary. Then an hour later, they found another in Colorado. They were determined
to get
rid of him.
But did he turn down Calgary?
He did.
No trade.
He did. But the point I'm making is they were determined to trade him. It wasn't like Calgary called him up and I was like, oh, it's a trade
we'll
we just can't
him.
Refuse.
Yeah, yeah.
It was, okay, you don't want him? This team. Who else wants
exactly.
him? He was gone the second he got suspended.
And I get it. I do get that.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to be accountable for that. But that one, needless to say, has not worked out. I mean, Tyson Barry has been a disaster, and Kerfoot, he's just a guy in the league. He's an NHL player, but he's just there.
And you give him full marks. He gives an effort. He, you know, he plays, and I totally agree.
But they're not going to win or lose because of Kerfoot tonight, where Kadri has the ability to be a guy where you're like, they won tonight because of him.
Exactly.
Right? And a night like tonight, Kadri's presence missed, Morgan Riley's missed, but can't be an excuse. You know, they've been gone for 61 games prior to tonight. Kadri has anyway, and Riley's been out for a while.
Yep.
So we'll see what kind of response they have. Time now for our best bets brought to you by Proline. Over the number, Jersey, San Jose tonight. I'm on Washington home plus against Montreal. I think Ovi scores a couple tonight.
I'm with you.
I think 700 gets celebrated.
699 and 700 coming up.
I think it's going to happen tonight. And Winnipeg rolling. I think they get a win tonight in Ottawa. Throw down 20. You can score 100. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with Proline. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Proline, get way into the game. All right, Craig, you're off to That's Hockey.
And I am.
Full slate of games tonight. Enjoy those.
And I will.
Always good to see you.
Yeah, it was always great. And I won't be here tomorrow, but Jamie and Ole will be here, and they'll talk to you then.
They'll chat then.
You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. It's Nissan's Winter Warrior event. Lease or finance a Kicks or Qashqai to receive up to 3 payments on them. Finance rates from 0% on select Qashqais. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.